So many questions a year after Sandy, some psychological, some meteorological, all scientific, and with us is perhaps the best person to pose some of those questions to, Ira Flatow, host of Public Radio International's Science Friday. Ira, welcome.
Thank you, John.
I'll postpone the psychological questions for the moment. When we think of meteorology, weather, are we really talking about climate and the idea of severe storms being a climate phenomenon, or are they one-offs?
No, this is the new normal. I mean, Sandy is a perfect example of what was predicted, how it would work, and it actually came to fruition the way everybody thought it would.
And is this because there's more energy in the environment, so therefore storms are bigger, or are the patterns of the atmosphere itself disrupted in some way? They're coming from different places.
Well, if you raise the temperature just a tiny little bit, then a lot of things kick in. You have warmer water. So you have more energy that comes out of the water to feed a hurricane. Winter storms, where we raise the temperature a little bit. Look at all these snowstorms that have been tremendous, dropping all kinds of storms, snow everywhere. Doesn't mean just because of we're getting warmer, doesn't mean it's going to stay warm everywhere during the wintertime. It just means there's more moisture in the air. And when you have a hurricane, there's more moisture, there's more rain, and the hurricane itself is much wider. People don't remember that Sandy really was not a hurricane level when it hit New Jersey, when it slammed in there. It was not a hurricane force. But it was so big and so wide and so powerful that it created a tremendous amount of damage without having to have those giant, you know, type 5 winds.
Well, the struggle of them trying to figure out how to describe it. I mean, it wasn't a hurricane. They called it Superstorm Sandy,
right,
which seemed, you know, silly because really it mostly said they don't understand this phenomenon. It's fundamentally new. And one of the issues that was really standing out to me was the fact that this storm kind of parked itself.
Yeah.
That the atmosphere, it now contains these walls, high-pressure systems that stick and keep storms over places for longer periods of time. That's as much a problem as anything.
Yeah, it took a left turn. You know, hurricanes don't usually take a left turn as they're coming up the coastline. They go out toward, you know, Nantucket or someplace. But there was another front to the left of it that sort of sucked it in and made it take a left turn. But the Europeans who were coming up with computer models actually predicted this pretty well, that it would do this. The American model was not that accurate, but the European model was a little more accurate and predicted it days in advance that this would be the track that would be taking. So that was one of the lessons that was learned from this, is how accurate our forecasting is getting to be.
We think of turbulent weather and severe weather to be about storms, but it's also about persistent high systems, high-level systems that park and produce droughts and create dryness. We're also seeing that in this climate change model.
Yeah, we're seeing the record dry. We're seeing record temperatures. I mean, record temperatures everywhere. In Australia, even, we don't think of those parts of the world. Australia last summer had to add another color to its temperature chart because it couldn't get up. You couldn't register 120 Fahrenheit on its chart, so I'd added purple in there to show how hot it was getting in Australia. We also didn't think very much about storm surge. That's really where the damage was done in Sandy on the East Coast, was that you had the sea level was rising 14 feet in New York City. And it opened up places that it had went to places that storms had never gone before. And now that those places have been opened and the landscape has been changed, other storms are going to imitate that. And it will be easier now. You won't need a Sandy to flood and inundate those places.
There's some elementary physics associated with a storm surge in the sense that a big surge coming off of a beach, if it's channeled up a narrow estuary, can multiply its force, and that's what we saw in communities all around New York and New Jersey.
Yeah, you had really a perfect storm situation because if you recall, it came ashore at high tide. So you had this super storm surge, then you had high tide, then you had the water being channeled, and then the water created new channels. people talk about, okay, what should we do about this? Is there a technological fix? Well, sometimes some scientists are saying the fix could be worse than the storm. People had talked about building gates, you know, things that would hold the water back in New York Harbor. Well, you're just moving the water to some other place. You know, you're going to push it into Staten Island if you try to block the water, and you're not going to be able to do it.
And that's what they've discovered on the Mississippi River. The more jetties and walls they've created on the Mississippi River means when it does reach flood stage, the pressure is higher in those places that don't have those walls, so they flood more.
And all this money, there, you know, the government allocated $51 billion for reconstruction. A lot of people want to just put the sand back, and what they don't understand is that there will be more storms that will just keep moving the sand away. Coastline scientists are saying it's going to happen over and over again. It's like standing with your rolling up your pants and standing in a river. You may escape that rising water this time, but it's going to come back. And the real answer is a long-term solution of moving people away from the coastline. Okay, you can put them up on stilts for a little bit, but then we're in an age where the ocean is rising, and it's rising more and more. You're just pushing. You're kicking the can down the road, as we like to say these days.
And it's a wet can, that's for sure. You know, earlier this hour, Sean Donovan, Housing and Urban Development Secretary, was describing the challenges of the federal government trying to figure out what is the responsibility when people live in harm's way. And then we had a conversation with a photographer who sees in disaster zones that people's sense of home is so powerful, they do things that are against their interests. Yeah. Scientifically, do you think we can convince people to do the things that are in their best interest?
Well, it's a question of politics, and it's a question of money. Because if you keep doing this over and over again, if you keep spending money to rebuild these areas because people want to live there, they want their restaurants there, and they want to have their oceanfront homes, then you're sucking money into it from other places you might want to spend. Other things will be maybe your school systems, maybe other kinds of projects you'd like to spend the money on. Now you have to allocate it to putting the beach back, reconstructing the boardwalk, things like that. So it's a question of politics and money.
New York City in the turn of the century didn't have much of an ocean view. We were afraid of the water. The 1800s, 1700s taught us to be afraid of the waterfront. Now in our kind of gentrified, we love the view sort of new culture in New York, we're really discovering why our ancestors were terrified of the Hudson.
They were. And it's a question people are asking now. My tax money, you know, my tax money pays for you to rebuild your home. My federal insurance allows you to rebuild your home. They're beginning to ask, why should I be paying for you to have that oceanfront view when I don't, you know, I can't even get to the beach myself?
Not a scientific question, but certainly a political question. Ira Flatow, host of Public Radio International's Science Friday. Thanks so much.
You're welcome, John.